Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at InternetAdvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Thank you so much for joining us for a very special Internet Advisor. Special, you say? Yes, of course, because of the very special guest we have for this. You. That's right. We are going to have an entire two-hour program dedicated to your questions about your computers and other devices, getting on the Internet, getting around it, getting over it if you need to. The number, 800-859-0957. Call right now and be part of our program for the next 2 hours. 800-859-0957. Thank you. I hope you didn't miss what that young lady was saying. We are taking your calls right now. Normally, during our program at this time, we are talking with guests and try to bring you information that will help you with your computers or things that are of interest, like a cookie a day blog that we talked about last week during the Mom's Day program. But today is very special because we're leaving the entire program open to you. And I guess the good news is, because so many people are used to kind of hearing us with the experts, etc., we got phone lines wide open for you right now. So I want to give you a hint. If you want to get in and ask your question, now is a perfect time to do it, at 1-800-859-0957. And as soon as you call in, we'll start taking your calls. Let me say hello to my posse here in studio. Gary, it's good to see you. Gary Baker.
It's great to see you. And I think people should start dialing so they get in queue before they go to the website and look at the photograph that you put up today. InternetAdvisor.net. If you want to see the photograph that Foster put up, it's right under, you can't miss it, it's right under, we're all ears waiting to hear from you.
I look for a good graphic for that. There are
you
a lot of
certainly got one.
But I thought that one was an excellent one. It looks an awful lot like my dog, as a matter of fact. It could have been our little dog, Ling Ling. Eddie Riddell is in the house as well. Eddie, good to have you here.
Always great. You know, it's good to take a break from garage sale hunting to come into the show with you guys, because I have just as much fun here as I do traveling the back roads looking for
those sales.
No, that's
saying a lot for it, folks. Yeah. That's saying an awful lot for Mr. Riddell to have him in here instead of being out garage sailing.
I feel like a picker, you know? I just love it.
Maybe they have the cameras. They have a special camera truck following you doing garage sales. Once again, just quickly for you, because we're seeing some folks calling in now, and this is a great time to call in, as Gary was saying, because normally we don't have people calling in at this time for questions, but we're going to take the entire show and dedicate it to your questions. Now, it doesn't have to be anything hugely complex. It's just what's bugging you with your computer, with a peripheral you're dealing with, something on the Internet. I had a call from somebody today about the Kindle, for instance, and I had to say that, you know, I'm not a Kindle user, so it's a little hard for me to talk about it, but that's what's happening. Gary, I was just thinking back to 15 years ago when we started the program. We really were talking about PCs at that time, basically.
Well, and modem initialization strings, trying to get your 14.4 modem. This just goes back a few years, Foster. We're in our 15th year.
I know, but there was limited to us. There was really a very limited pool that you were dealing with.
Yeah.
And now there's so much out there. For instance, a friend had called me today and says, I can't get this book, which I downloaded onto my computer, over onto my Kindle to be able to read it. And I thought, I've never seen a Kindle interface. I don't know what it looks like.
Right.
But there's just so many devices out there.
That's
part of the challenge.
Yeah, it used to be that we made every mistake you could make. Well, now we can't possibly make every mistake.
I can't afford the computer.
There's just so much out there.
Oh, there is. And I couldn't afford the devices to make the mistakes.
You know, like one of the things I'm having a difficulty with was a number of PDF publications and white papers are published in Adobe Acrobat. And I want to be able to read it on my HP touchpad, or I want to read it on my PC. Well, that's using Adobe. On my Android phone, I can use QuickOffice to read it, or I could use the Adobe's Acrobat Reader, mm-hmm. or, you know, there's so many or I could use the Cabrera free book reader if I wanted to. There's so many options.
I was trying to tell a friend of mine, this friend that I was helping out with a Kindle, I said, you know, you really can download the readers right onto your PC. But she said, I really want to walk it. I wanted to put it on my Kindle.
Yes, yes.
And it was transferring. She was seeing that it was there, but she couldn't open it up. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about that problem. I may call Judy and have her call us right now. But right now, let's go out to Rebecca, our first caller of this day here on the Internet Advisor. And Rebecca, welcome. What may we do for you?
I have a kind of silly question. I am completely computer illiterate. I took a Word class at a local community college.
Good.
And it basically taught me Word. But my problem is I don't know how to use a computer. I'm not comfortable even getting on Facebook.
Sure.
I just think it's cluttered. And
yes.
When I go to even use my email in the office, I don't know how to set up contact lists.
Mm-hmm.
There's basically very limited knowledge that I have.
Thank you for your honesty, by the way. I think there's a lot of people out there who are in exactly the same place, and you kind of you feel embarrassed because everybody's got their little device and, you know, for this and that.
Everybody knows shortcuts but me. I get teased about it, but everybody says what a computer can do, but they can't tell me where to go to learn them.
Learn how
to do
it.
It's like they've had it for so many years,
very,
they just take
very good point.
It.
Eddie, what are your thoughts?
Ask questions. Family members, friends, colleagues, workmates. I mean, that's how I learned. And
yep.
I learned so much with the people I work with, and I didn't realize you could do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I'll stumble across, now that I've been doing this for 30 years, I'll stumble across something that I never realized you could, you know, do something with a computer in that way, you know.
Yeah, how about you?
You know, I was working with a friend this morning, and this was just in Word, but it's in so many other especially Microsoft Office products, but, you know, just the simple shortcuts. Control X for cut,
Control V
control
for paste,
or
Control C for cut, copy.
And Control V for paste.
Yeah.
And wow, what a productivity gain she had. You know, and it was just interesting because of that. Back to Rebecca's question, I like Ed's answer. You know, ask anybody and everybody. Somebody teach you, say, great, show me something. You're so smart, show me something.
Right. Rebecca, do you have family members?
And, you know, you can do that at your public library. That's
there,
where
I was
going to
say that. Yes,
that's where
I
started to learn, right?
Right. Rebecca, I went into the public library, and this is now late 80s, early 90s, and at that time there were plenty of basic classes I could take in there. You could try your public
library.
Unfortunately,
I'm in a very rural community, so I was hoping, like,
you might want
classes, something. What would you recommend at a community college level? Because I did take Word, and like I said, that's very limited.
Yes.
I don't.
Yeah, you can do
understand.
That. Well, Rebecca, we haven't got the time.
Hold on.
Yeah, hang
we'll
on.
Talk to you after.
Because we'll come back and talk
we'll
a little bit more about this, as well as some other folks who are getting on here on the Internet Advisor. Open lines right now. Give us a call. Thank you so much for joining us for a very special Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker's here, Ed Rudell as well. And just kind of briefly, what we're doing right now, we normally don't do until the second hour of our program, which is we're opening up our phone lines to everyone out there so that you can ask your questions about computers. We've done this from time to time just to give more people a chance to not only ask their questions, but for other people to hear some of those solutions as well. And by the way, if as you're listening, you think that you've got something to add to the conversation, maybe an answer.
Answers
or
are
a different
always good.
We love to do this. So please use that 1-800-859-0957 as a way of getting some answers to your questions as well. Now, we were talking with Rebecca just before we came to the break about a very good question, and that was, you know, how do you use a computer? Let me just back up for a second to say a friend of mine today, the one that was talking to me about the Kindle problem, you know, was saying, computers are darn complicated, and it's a real problem with a learning curve. Now, we all live in that computer world, so we've kind of been in it for a long time.
Well, but we had to learn.
We had to learn someplace. Yeah. But what I'm thinking is, and Gary, I'm taking my lead again from Mike Amon, your friend who came and visited us, is that the move to the tablets where you're dealing with single icons on there, that's where it's going from now on. People don't want to know all this technical stuff behind the scenes.
Right.
They want it for email. They want to press the little icon that says email. Boom,
right.
They're there.
Yeah, and
that's
it's pretty
point.
Easy. Now, we're still having trouble, and you still can't edit some of the more complicated
yes.
documents as easily. But
okay.
And the other thing is you might want to go to a, I hate to say this, an Apple store, because they've always been known, you could buy one or two suites of their software, iPhoto, iLife, and that would provide 95% of your functionality.
I have some beefs with Apple, even though I'm an Apple user, about their prices, but boy, you can't beat them for training.
If Cal was here, he would say, you're in a perfect position. If you're that computer illiterate, go with a Mac and just stop by an Apple store.
Yep.
Well, and the other thing, though, is you have kids. We always suggest make a deal, right? Because sometimes kids
you
don't
want to eat?
Yeah.
Show mom how to use a computer.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's important. But also, kids sometimes today don't use common sense on computers, right? They give out too much information. They do some dumb things. So a lot of times, common sense, adults and especially older adults can use common sense and help inject common sense into the conversation while also they're asking children and grandchildren to help them learn a little bit more about the computer. The other thing, one of the best things that I know of is if you can get to the internet, go to YouTube.com.
Yeah, YouTube has
instructions
for everything.
You know, you can watch them do certain things. Yeah. It's really a great
way. If you learn
and
that
it's
way.
Free, and it's at your pace.
Yeah, and if you're a visual learner, it's a great way to do it. By the way, as a matter of fact, John, one of our old friends from Jackson, you've got some suggestions for Rebecca, too?
Yes, I do.
What was your...
Hey, you guys got a great program today.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Actually, I've learned more about computers by picking up the computer books for dummies.
Oh, dummies book. That's true.
Oh, and so many people, once they're done with them, they give them away or you can pick them up very reasonably priced.
Very good.
In a used bookstore.
Ed, the garage sale expert who has been sailing this afternoon, by the way, just said a garage sale.
But certainly just in the library. Check them out.
Yes, right? Check them out from the library, exactly. Or you can go, if you can get online, go on to Amazon or have somebody go on to Amazon and there are used copies of those things that you can find. We're hoping, by the way, in a couple of weeks to get somebody on who has written a book that's kind of like Computers for Seniors.
Mm-hmm.
If you will, I hate saying dummies, but it's for people who are getting, older folks who are getting into using computers. We've got a great book on that, so we'll see.
But the Dummies series is a great series, John. And
they are not dummy-based.
No, not at all.
But a lot of people take insult to that.
Yeah, but the idea is, John, that it really is somewhat basic, right?
And accessible.
It can be more, you can learn more, but at least you can get the basics.
Got it. John, it was a great thing to recommend, I think, for all of us as we move on with our computers. And they have various levels of things that you can learn through these dummies books. So thanks again, John, for being on and giving that great piece of advice.
Thank you.
Nancy, welcome to the Internet Advisor. You have got a problem with a Web Picasa album.
I do. I don't have a computer. I have an iPad.
Okay.
One of the originals.
That is a computer anyway. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, my brother had sent me some photographs and with an email. And so I looked at the pictures and all that. And then, I don't know, towards the bottom it said something about did I want to share them or whatever. And I pushed the button, and I shouldn't have. And so then all the photos went into a Picasa web album.
Oh.
Okay.
And now I can't get the pictures.
So how did he send them to you?
He just, forwarded them with an email.
So he attached them to your email.
Right.
Now,
and what
these...
did you do with the email?
Well,
did you erase the email or is it still there?
Well, I was just looking and now it's been erased.
So have you
This was probably in February.
Okay, so have you gone to your trash?
Not in the kitchen.
No. Yeah, but in your trash.
I am okay. I'm going to trash. Right. It says no messages.
There's nothing in the trash.
Nothing's in trash.
So Picasa wouldn't take and delete your message, your email. So you actually probably deleted it. You might have your email set up so that it automatically deletes.
After a certain amount of time, that it doesn't.
So,
that's what I'm wondering, if it's after a certain amount of time.
And that's because you can't keep everything on your iPad.
Gary,
it probably does that. So, if you just noticed it right away, it's probably you put it in your trash. you could go get it out of your trash, put it back in your inbox, and then you can take and store them.
You're using a recovery. Do you think it's in a? Do you think it's online in Gmail under the Picasa headings? Because don't they own that now?
Now, if I go to Picasa, it just comes up Picasa Web Album, and it says, sorry, that page was not found.
Well, did you actually sign up for a Picasa Web Album account?
No, I never did.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Okay, so, but it is possible you have Picasa Web Album Lights installed on your iPad, so you might want to delete that, just in case, because it's probably... become your default, you know, photo editor or photo album. So you might want to look through all your applications and remove the Picasa.
If you don't want it.
Well, there's nothing in it.
Right.
And it might correct this issue.
Well, the problem, I think, is that you probably have deleted that email before you took the photos off.
And her brother can resend her those photos. And he could go into his sent items.
Yeah. But this isn't just one. This was like six or eight.
Yeah, so
six or eight different emails.
Right.
You could, well, but see what happened was after a month, they deleted them, right? Yeah. Or however long you have set up the your email account to keep them on your iPad.
But even before that, when I still had the email, all of a sudden I couldn't get the photos. It would always go to like a Picasa web advertisement.
You know, well, see, and it probably will, because what your brother has probably done is he uses Picasa
to share it with
web albums, and he has an online account, and he could just select photos using his own computer and say, I'd like to mail these to all these recipients.
Yes.
And when he sends them to you, it comes in an email. But at the bottom, there's always going to be the Picasa advertisement.
Well, they want to know if your friend uses it, would you like to use it as well?
Right.
And if you say yes, then you either sign up for an account and you can use it, or, you know, you can say no. But it probably never was an attachment. If that's what happened, it wasn't an attachment. It's on
his. It's just a link.
Yeah, it's just a link back to his Picasa.
So here's some thoughts.
And you can't get to it now because you don't have the email.
So here's, I guess, some thoughts on this. Ed, you have made a suggestion that if Picasa is on there, she might, as an application, she might want to make sure that it gets off.
Right.
Because doesn't want this happening, other images being dumped into that. And then after that, when she does receive an image, try to save it to her hard drive rather than, and on the iPad, I believe you can do that.
Yep.
And instead of going into that web album. So, Nance, that's the best we can do for you right now. If you'd like, put that question into our forum, and we'll see if we can get some more answers for you as well. Hey, we're coming back. Lots of folks wanting to talk, and we'll be opening the phone lines up for you as well at 800-859-0957. Delighted to have you along for this very special edition of the Internet Advisor. And we'd like to welcome Angela, by the way, who is here. She is our Shakira. She is our screener here. We borrowed her from another program, and we're delighted to have her here. Rich Lozinski, as well as our engineer. And we got our gang in studio here. By the way, one thing that we're going to try to do with our phones today in order to get as many of you online as possible is if we begin to run into something that's a little thornier problem, we're going to refer the question into our forums. And there, a whole bunch of people can help you with them. But if we can manage to get to a solution right away, we'll be able to do that. That way, more of you will be able to get your questions on the air. So once again, that number is 800-859-0957.
There? Bonnie is a suggestion for Nancy.
Oh, good. Hey, Bonnie, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much. So what is your suggestion for our listener, Nancy, who was having a problem on her iPad saving images?
Oh, well, this was the Kindle one.
Oh, good. Okay.
Okay.
Yes,
this
please.
Is, saving the book from the computer to the Kindle.
Yes, tell me about that, please.
My sister and I'm not very literate, but my sister is, and she was doing it for me in Florida. And we had done it two other times. And the third time we tried to do it, which was like 3 months later, it wouldn't save. We would download it and then the books, and it wouldn't tell us where to save it.
Okay, now
you're
just
supposed
by the way,
to be able to save it to the desktop.
Right.
And then you're supposed to get the menu and have all these books on your desktop saved. and drag them into the Kindle, into the blank spaces.
That's what I thought was the case. Now, by the way, what we're talking, let me just say, wait, just for our listeners' sake, what we're talking about here, the Kindle is that little reader from Amazon that's great for reading books on.
$199.
$199.
The
bucks.
Kindle Fire. Some of the other Kindles are cheaper.
I don't have the Fire. I've got the basic one that was probably $120 to
great,
begin with.
They're down to like $79.
Great for reading books, isn't it, right?
Bonnie? Yes, it is. Wonderful.
So what
and
we're
you
talking...
buy the books, and they can be anything from like $2 up to maybe $15
right.
or so.
And then they're downloaded onto your computer, not straight onto the Kindle, but onto your computer. Then you have a connection to your Kindle. And then the idea is, and this is what I was telling my friend, put it on your desktop and then open up the Kindle and then just drag it on.
Right. But it won't do that because if you have your pop-ups blocked on the computer, it won't do it. So all you have to do is unblock those pop-ups,
well,
and
that
then
implies,
everything works.
But that implies that you have to be in your web browser, you know, because web browsers have the pop-up blockers, not, you know.
Oh, not the computer itself.
Not the computer itself.
Well, when you're on the Internet, though.
After you've
gone to Amazon, you have to be on the Internet.
Yes, you're right. You're right, Bonnie.
Okay.
So then you got to make sure that your pop-up blocker isn't on, so then you can actually.
And then everything works perfect for you.
Okay, and then the steps you said, Bonnie, were you download it through Kindle from Amazon, pardon me, onto the desktop of your computer, and then you hook
you save it. You save it onto the desktop.
Okay, and then you hook up your Kindle with that little dongle, the USB connection, I think it is.
Right.
To
you
your,
plug it in
to your computer, and then you simply open up the Kindle, and then you drag the book onto the Kindle, right?
Right. It'll show a menu, and it'll have all the books that you have on the Kindle.
Right.
And there'll be a lot of blank spaces.
Okay.
And then you just drag your new book onto the blank space.
Okay, good.
And it's there.
Excellent. Thank you so much for giving us
But it's all because of those darn pop-ups. If they're blocked, then you can't do it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, I've got, for instance, on my browser, I've enabled one of those pop-up blockers, but I have to be careful because there are some places where it'll keep me, like on banking site, it'll keep me from being able to do certain things on the banking
site.
Some
of the pop-ups are how to pay your bills or whatever the pop-up
is. So but that's a really good point you brought up, Bonnie. I want to thank you for that so much, for giving a hand to one of our other listeners
that's
as well.
Idea.
That is great.
You know, it's so funny because as we were talking about it, I'm thinking, What do I have open on my iPad? I just looked. I have Private Cloud for Dummies. And it's right next to a new study by Baylor University to show 46 ways that Eagle Scouts are different. And I was showing that to my son. So those are
all neat things that you can do with these readers.
And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I've got all that stuff.
You know, Ed, what's I find interesting about this, we were talking about our complexity of devices, that somebody who doesn't feel that they know computers very well can get hold of one of these Kindles or an iPad or something like that and feel like they can navigate their way around it.
You know, that's a good point because they have a simplistic, intuitive interface.
That's it.
And they don't offer everything. They just offer five different things.
Yep.
Well, and the fun, like I said, I have two or three things open at one time. I forgot they were open because I haven't used the Private Cloud for Dummies book in probably 3 weeks. But it was still left open on my iPad. It doesn't really matter.
That's fascinating. So. Okay, let's go to Fred in St. Clair Shores. Fred, thank you very much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And you've got an Internet issue, I see.
Yes, I do.
What is it?
When I turn on my computer, I have a laptop, and I try to get on the Internet. It says Internet Explorer cannot display this page. And I've tried everything I can to diagnose a problem, and it's not doing it.
Now, you're using Internet Explorer?
Oh,
pardon me.
Are you connected? Do you know?
Yes, I am. Down the icon below, it says I am connected.
And it shows you're connected to your wireless. Are you?
Yes.
Do you get your internet email?
I get it on my regular computer.
Okay. Have you tried powering off and on or hitting the reset in the back of your cable or DSL modem?
No.
Okay, that's one of the first steps I would do. I mean, you're probably attaching to your wireless network because you got all the bars on the taskbar that show that.
Well, you're connected to your wireless router.
We need
to know if you're connected to the internet.
Right. So what I would do is I'd hit the reset button. Do you get your phone through your who's your internet provider?
Yes.
I'm sorry, who is it?
Huawei.
Huawei. Okay, yeah. Okay. So you have a single box through which you receive your telephone and your internet, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
There should be a reset button on there because most of those include a battery, much like a battery that you would find in a laptop.
So unplugging them does no good.
That took me a while to figure out when the internet phones.
Because I was about to say what you do is you unplug the thing from the wall, and then you unplug your router, and then... Yeah.
Nope. They provide a reset button.
Because I just did that yesterday with mine.
Is the phone working?
Yes, phone works fine.
I'd still try resetting it just in
case.
Okay,
that's just... Is there a little dial or...
should be a little button in the back somewhere.
A little reset button.
Little reset button. That
somewhere near
that.
The bottom, usually, but where the power cord is, there's a little either red button or something.
You know, but if the phone's working, then that usually indicates that...
Well, here's the other thing I would say.
I will tell you that there's lots of times that I can't get to a printer at work. I use wireless at work, and I'm thinking, why can't I get to the printer? And then I realize I'm on the guest network at work. Right?
Oh.
And so I'm connected to the internet, I'm connected to the router, I'm just not connected to the internet.
In this
case, I'm not connected to my network.
Right. But in your case, Fred, do you have another browser that you can try?
Is there another computer in the house? Is it working?
Yes.
Oh, so it has internet access?
Yes.
Okay, forget what I... Oh, yeah. No, it might be still worth trying to reset the modem. I've had instances where it forgets about a device.
Right.
Like, I can continuously attach to it, and like, why does it keep on forgetting or not allowing my laptop to get to the internet? My kids are working, the other computer's working, why aren't I resetting it? Can sometimes take care of that.
The other thing I would suggest is also, we recommend this just generally, Fred, is to have two browsers on your on your laptop or computer, whatever, to getting to the internet. That way you can diagnose things. So, for instance, when Internet Explorer isn't working, you'd fire up Chrome, you would fire up Firefox or Safari or Opera or one of the other browsers you have there, just for diagnostic purposes. And if you can get through to the internet then with the other browser, then you know that the problem is in, for instance, Internet Explorer or whatever the browser
may
be.
So which browser are you using now?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay. The Big Blue E?
Yes, that's the one.
Okay, and so then you might, how old is your computer?
About 2 years old.
So you probably have, you may have 8 on there, in which case It is 7.
Yes.
Well, Windows 7, but do you know if it's IE 8, if it's Internet Explorer 8?
No, I don't know that.
So what you want to do is, why don't you go to... The Microsoft site. You can't get on the Microsoft site as
well. He can reset the Internet Explorer's settings.
So you can default.
Yeah.
So if you go into within Internet Explorer and select the Tools Internet Options, you should see a Tools or drop down on the Internet Explorer 8 or 9 or whatever, or even 7. And then you could select Internet Options. And then on the far right tab, you have Advanced.
Right.
And you select the Advanced tab. There'll be 8 tabs on the top. And at the bottom of the screen, you'll see a button that says Reset. And that'll reset your Internet Explorer to the manufacturer's defaults. It'll just like you unboxed your computer, but it only resets your browser settings in case something's damaged in it.
Fred, once you get it set up, once you get this solved, and you will, get another browser on there, like Chrome or one of the other ones, for diagnostic purposes, okay? That will help you as well. Fred, thanks so much for your call. Glad we could give you a little bit of a hand here. Anybody else have any thoughts on that? Give us a call with an answer.
And I was going to suggest just changing browsers, upgrading to 9.
Internet Explorer 9 might help as well. Okay, here's the number again, 800-859-0957. This program is all about you. Thank you so much for being with us. You know, guys, one of the things that I hear said so often is either a preface on one of the emails or with callers very often, I'm not a computer geek. Well, you know something? You don't have to be. And as a matter of fact, that's what we have, Gary and I and Ed along with us for many years, have been trying to do, is just to be kind of the translators for people who are not computer geeks or specialists. And, you know, this really isn't a program for specialists. It's the program for the common folks out there who just would love to use the machines they're using even a little bit better than they are and not have them dominating them, but really controlling the machines. So that's why we have our special program going on today, where we've kept 2 hours aside now. And we've got another one coming for your calls at 1-800-859-0957. 859-0957. And our motto here is the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. So please feel free to ask. Now, Eddie, you had some thoughts to follow up on somebody who's having problems getting on the internet because of the browser they was using.
Yeah, Fred was talking about that his laptop was not getting access to the internet. His page cannot be displayed, but right. other computers in the house were working. And we gave him a number of solutions, which is to reset the cable modem and such. The, I had three other additional solutions. First, you could try hardwiring. I mean, he has a laptop. More than likely, there's a cable connection in the back of the of his WOW modem or his router that he has
right,
at home. He could hardwire with a network cable just to see if it then works. If
that's
it does,
that blue one with a big end on it. Yeah,
yeah, it's like a big phone cable. And that yeah. way you could identify yeah. it's working wired, but why isn't it working wireless? Well, then you know right. where you can narrow down where the
right.
problem
the
is.
Troubleshooting it.
The other thing is that if he wants to get another browser on there, as Gary suggested, which is excellent suggestion, say if Internet Explorer is having problems, we describe to the user how he can reset the web browser settings, but he can also use his other home computer and go to Mozilla.com and download the Firefox onto a flash drive.
Or Google Chrome.
Or Google Chrome, and then walk it over to his other computer and then install the application
right,
onto
great.
His other computer.
That's great, great.
And
great,
the third
great.
Thing is that he can go into the Windows Device Manager and you can always, and on the newer computers, you could say Device Manager in your search bar. It'll bring mm-hmm. up your Windows Device Manager. And on laptops, you could just go under your network adapters and then delete your wireless network adapter, shut down your computer, reboot. Windows will rediscover the that
Excellent.
You have a wireless network adapter and That's reload right. all the software for
good.
That.
Very good. Yep. Okay. All right. Let's head out then to John in Ohio. John, welcome to the Internet Advisor. And you've got a question about changing languages. That's interesting.
Yes, I had a Microsoft Office from a previous century and recently upgraded to Microsoft Office 2007. And after doing that...
Didn't get
I
all
just,
the way to 10, eh? You
yeah,
just got stopped at 7.
Someday
okay.
I'll get there. I discovered that with my Outlook Express, when I did a spell check, it checked in French.
Did you want it to do that?
No, I didn't really want that.
Okay.
French, you're having enough problems right now. No, I don't want them checking my spelling included.
Yes. Well, anyway, this is Outlook Express number 6, and I went to the help, and I figured out how to do it. I went and all the way down through the tools, the options, the spell, language, change, and I found out that French was the only option for Outlook Express 6. But I also understood that Outlook Express gets its spell check from Microsoft Office.
Yeah.
So I went to Microsoft Office, and I went through all those things all the way down through the tools in the Office 2000 language and and looked, and it had been selected. English was the only one that was selected.
Yeah, okay.
And I checked in Word, and I checked in a couple of other places,
sure.
and they were all selected for English.
So no. they were all, none of them were... All of them were defaulting to English except Outlook Express.
Now, let me ask this. If you have Office 2007 or any Office, you have an opportunity to use Outlook rather than Outlook Express.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And do you have a reason that you're not?
No, I just... It was something I didn't even contemplate.
Okay,
oh,
so,
it's a much
better
thing. It's much matter of fact. They have eliminated Outlook Express. Period.
And they're using Microsoft Windows Live,
yeah.
which is what Microsoft's solution is. If you wanted to continue using Outlook Express in order to fix your language pack, because they describe that exact problem. You had an ancient version of Microsoft Office. You upgraded to Office 2007. It says by default it removes your dictionaries for Outlook Express. And those languages, English is one of them, which does not make sense. Their solution is to install Microsoft Live. And maybe that's their subversive way of getting you to go to live mail.
real obvious, as a matter of fact.
And that's, I love Gary's suggestion. You'll love Microsoft Outlook. And matter of fact, when you launch Microsoft Outlook for the first time, it's going to say, would you like to migrate your Microsoft Outlook Express account? And, you know, we see that you have another mail account defined on this computer. Would you like us to import all the settings from that?
Yeah, that'll take care of a lot of your problems for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'll like it a lot.
You'll really like it.
And then what you... into the modern century. Huh?
Yeah.
and, you know, it really is much better. But then if you want to change languages, it's simply go to File, go down to options. Okay. It'll pop up, and that's in Word, Outlook. You know, they're all standardized.
They're all standardized at that point. Okay. You can go to I use Office 2011 on the Mac, and the same thing there. I can go to Tools.
Right.
Language and identify, because I switch back and forth between Spanish and English, and so I use it a lot, and it's
so
a very
you have this
device.
Problem all the time.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. And very often, everything's underlined. Well, that's because I got the wrong language.
And, you know, and this is a common problem that I've experienced at work a number of times, and that where people were like, why is every word that I'm typing in my Microsoft Word all of a sudden incorrect, and I get the red squiggly line underneath it, and it's because the default language has been changed.
Exactly. Hey, by the way, just a little footnote for folks out there, and thank you very much, John, for calling, and I'm glad we'll be able to shine a little light on this for you. But on the iPhones, by the way, and with iOS devices, you can actually change, just by on the keyboard itself, you can change languages, which I often do when I'm working on my iPhone as well, so it's available there.
Oh, excellent.
All right, let's go back out to Murray. Murray is with us in Oak Park. And Murray, how are you doing? Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Fine.
Good.
I have a problem. I have a problem that's been plaguing me for a year.
Mm-hmm.
I use Chrome, and I also use Firefox. Mm-hmm. But I happen to like Chrome a lot since I got used to it.
Oh, yeah.
But every time I go to YouTube, it opens up in a full screen, and I can't stop it. Mm-hmm. So if I want to look at those codes or something else that's on the sidebar, I got to go into... I've got to go into Firefox. And I've tried everything. I don't know what to do to stop that from opening up in full screen.
So YouTube has a setting that will tell you to, it can open up and, it asks you to toggle between full screen or not.
Right.
And have you found that setting?
I did. It's in the settings tab. Mm-hmm.
So
I didn't even
know
that.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. And so now does that,
fix it.
Have you tried logging into your Chrome account? I assume that you have a Google account then, right?
I do.
Have you tried logging out of the Google account and logging back into it?
I have tried so much. Yeah, I've tried logging out. I even tried reloading it, downloading it. Maybe something is corrupted with the program.
What happens when you press the escape key while you're watching a YouTube video?
It doesn't go anywhere. I tried that too.
F11?
Yeah, F11. Yeah, I've done all that stuff. It works perfect in Firefox.
What
As a matter of fact, in IE, it works too.
Well, a Chrome extension. It may be a Chrome extension that's getting filed up in there.
I wonder if you have a YouTube add-on.
There's an extension.
It's interesting that both are owned by Google, by the way. But anyway.
Yeah, it is. It is. Ironic. That's just interesting.
Yeah.
I can try that. I found a problem similar to that I was having in Chrome where it was automatically putting in IP addresses,
Do you have the latest version of Chrome?
I do have the latest version.
Okay, then I would do this. Go to the wrench on the far right-hand side of your Chrome browser there, and go down into, there's a bunch of settings in there, but under settings and tools as well, and look for some of the extensions that can be on there. Those can get filed up. Folks, we're going to take a break right now and be heading into our second hour. So the phone lines are open for an entire next hour. You can call 800-859-0957. If you do that right now, we'll get back with you after our break shortly. So call right now, 800-859-0957, and we've got one more hour for you to call in with your questions and get some answers on the Internet Advisor.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. You can find more resources to protect your computer on our webpage at internetadvisor.net. Have a question? Post it in our discussion forums on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome to hour number two of our Internet Advisor this week. We call it a special edition because it's focused especially on you. We've already had an hour full of callers, and we've got lines open right now and some folks waiting to get on, but there's still room for you and your question at 800-859-0957. 800-859-0957. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell in the house to answer your questions. Give us a call. Thanks once again for joining us on the Internet Advisor. And as I said before, the specialness of this program is it's open for you. And as always, in this second hour, we have our lines open for your questions. Doesn't have to be rocket science. It can be something very simple. And we've got a couple calls waiting right now that are really neat. But we do have phone lines open. So, don't put off asking a question because very often tackling your question can help a whole lot of other people get some answers to their questions as well. So that number is 800-859-0957. And by the way, if as you're listening, you hear something that you've had some experience with and some success at solving a problem, please feel free to give us a call. We had a great call the last hour from somebody who's been using a Kindle and had run into some problems and could tell us about that. And so that's the kind of help that we dole out to people when they do give us a call. So let's go right out now to Dorothy from Northville. Dorothy, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How are you doing?
Fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I am a recipe junkie. I kind of call myself the happy cooker. And I am in the market for some kind of an iPad that has a fairly large screen so that I could download recipes.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have paper copies of recipes that I would like to scan somehow.
Sure.
And get them on an iPad so I can throw this paper away.
Let me just back you up for a second, Dorothy. You're saying on an iPad, do you mean a tablet device of some kind?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The iPads is just one of a lot of them that are out there. Probably the most popular one that's out there right now. But just to clarify for you and for the listeners as well, there's lots of other tablets out there on the market, too.
Right.
Okay, like I said, basically I would use it for recipes.
Yep.
So that I could use it in the kitchen and mm-hmm. not have a paper copy, but I would need something with a large screen.
Now, when you say large screen, what do you mean by large?
How well, big? I have a 17-inch laptop, but that I don't want that large, of course.
Right.
I don't know what the largest screen is for a tablet.
Gary, that's a good question. On the iPad
is it 9 or 10 inches?
Yeah, 10.
It's about 10 inches. I don't remember.
I think the Galaxy, there's some other ones out there that are about that
about
size.
The same. I don't think
10 inch, I think, is
bigger.
The top end, yeah.
Right. And, you know, that might be ideal because there are recipe applications that you could download, and so you could type your own recipes, and some of them actually support the ability to embed photos of the recipe as you've taken it. You can embed a photo within your recipe. One step further, you could download an application that will let you take a photograph using your iPad, and it converts it into the written language. It's a scanner. So instead of buying a separate scanner, character recognition.
Oh.
So you could actually take a photo of existing recipes that are 8.5 by 11 or even the flashcard size, 3x5s, and it'll do character recognition, your handwriting recognition, and convert it for you. You have to do is snap a bunch of pictures and then run that application, and it'll convert it to text for you.
Now, I'm curious why you want a tablet. Are you looking especially for something as portable?
Well, yes, because I would like to be able to, when I'm cooking, I can look at the tablet of the recipe that I'm trying to use and not have to worry about another piece of paper to put away.
Of course,
But I must have a zillion copies of different recipes. Well, now, I would not want to download all of them, but I've got to get rid of some of this paper.
You know, and that's what our guest last week had. She was doing cookies, and she was losing track of all her recipes. So what she did is she started her own blog, if you will, a website. And Stephanie Lazilinski, my niece, and she put them online, and she uses a variety of devices. She blogs about her cookie recipes. She types them in once, and they're good, and they go to the internet on the blog.
So they're stored.
And she shares them.
They're stored in the cloud, if you will.
Yep. And she started a Facebook page, cost 365 cookies, something like that, and she shares those recipes with her friends.
What do I need?
Well.
iPad and some kind of Android.
The desire.
Well,
need to make sure. It sounds to me like I would do this on a computer.
I was going to say the same thing.
Just because of the flexibility, you'll be able to scan it. You'll be able to use it.
At a bigger screen.
You'll pull it up. It's a bigger screen. You could put it on iPad if you found a recipe app. Applications, so you could find out if there's recipe applications for the iPad. I could go in and quickly look. I didn't see any that came up for the iPad, but the Android might have some. And then you'd have to make sure that they accept your scanned-in versions, right? So you'd have to do a little research on you know, recipe applications. There are absolutely great free ones if you just want to use your computer.
Right.
You could get to those. You could get to those using an iPad, but you'd have to use a browser.
Yeah.
So there, it would not. It wouldn't be real possible for me to get something more like a tablet or an iPad and use that instead
of... Dorothy, let me back you up for a second, because you've mentioned something about putting recipes in. I'm sure you're going to scan some of them in. And many of your printers out there, you can hook up to them wirelessly and have them scan a piece of a recipe in and then store that in your iPad. But there's a number of things. You're going to want to type in there, right, occasionally? Okay. Well, then you're going to have to get an external keyboard with your iPad. Now, Gary's got one. It's a nice little dock that he can set his iPad in. But in effect, Gary's ending up with a laptop. Small, very light. So you might want to think in terms of a laptop. Tell you what, Dorothy, we're going to do some more talking about this as we go on. And maybe there are some people out there who have tried making this application. Yeah. Let's see what
and
they have to say.
The other
as well.
Thing is that she's going to do all this work, and it could be... She could lose her iPad and all the recipes are gone. That's why if you put it in the cloud,
it's safe
in a
there.
Blog.
Yeah, and I don't see an app for recipes on the iPad.
All right.
There might be. I just don't find it.
Back with some more thoughts. Thanks so much for being with us on the Internet Advisor. Our number again, 800-859-0957. Now, we do have lines open right now, and we are going to be here for about another 40 minutes, so please... Use this opportunity to get some answers for your questions. Now, if anybody out there, by the way, has some thoughts for Dorothy, she wants to store a bunch of recipes, she wants something that's mobile, light, and that would give her enough storage space, this ton of recipes that she has in paper. If you've got any thoughts on that, please give us a call also at 800-859-0957. Maybe you're one of those cooks.
So I searched for recipes and didn't find any. I searched for recipe. And I only found 932 different applications on the iPad.
It was.
So if you only want to store one recipe, maybe that's it. Anyway, silly me for making a plural.
Lord.
Anyway, there are a lot.
There are a ton of them for the iPad.
There are a number of them that are free for the iPad. For the iPhone, which is probably a little less useful for recipes, there are only 1,917.
And as Ed said, then if you have an Android device, you've got a whole bunch of them there as well. Okay. All right, let's go back out to our phone lines and say hello to Marilyn from West Bloomfield. Hi, Marilyn. How are you doing, and how can we help you with your Yahoo Mail?
I'm confused. I'm secretary for an organization, and I send out emails usually about on a weekly basis because of, just to get notes out.
Yeah.
And on March the 4th, I sent one out, and everything went okay. And on March the 10th, and I didn't realize it until Monday, I think, of this week, when another board member said, wait a minute, three names are missing off the list. And I sent an email out on the 10th. I went back and looked at my sent mail, and three names were deleted from the list. And I've got, you know, several folders of contacts. I've got the Alto section, and I've got the board members, and I've got the general members.
Yeah.
And one of the persons whose name was deleted is also on the board, and her name was deleted off the board list.
Oh, okay. It took that name out completely.
So
it took it, but it shows up on the the total contact list.
Ah.
So I put her.
It removed it from the groups. It removed it from the groups that were created, right?
Right.
Now, just a question.
I put her back in.
Uh-huh.
And along with the two other members.
Yeah.
So far now, I have put them back in three times.
Oh.
And, but when I go to send out an email, earlier this week I tried to go send an email out, and I had to do it individually, pulling members' names, because the member group does not show up.
Now, quick question, and then to Ed. Are you talking about saving this as a Yahoo group? In other words, all this is being done online in Yahoo Mail?
Yes.
Yeah, that's... my wife has had issues with that, and my daughter as well.
I was going to say, so what you've done, in essence, is create a distribution list, and individual names keep disappearing. Is that what you're saying? Okay. The only thing that I could think of off the top of my head is, does anyone actually synchronize with Yahoo Mail using their mobile device? Phone, iPad.
You know what? There's a couple of people that I get messages from that will, you know, sent from my BlackBerry device or whatever.
But what we're concerned about is anyone, you know, you have a username and ID that has access to this Yahoo account, and I'm sure
does anybody else
work. You're using a work or a home computer to do that. Does anyone have a mobile device like a phone that they're also doing that with?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, you may have somebody else who has got permission to get at that list who may be unwittingly doing that.
Yeah, the first thing I would do is change the password for that Yahoo Mail account.
Yeah.
And that way you could find out who knows that password and who may be synchronizing with it. Because a lot of times with these mobile devices, if they accidentally make a deletion on their phone, you know, by swiping incorrectly, it will, you know, delete that contact from your Yahoo, from your online account.
Now, Marilyn, by the way, one of the other things I would say, just because of my wife's experience, they have a La Lechita group that my daughter also is involved in this. They've had terrible problems with Yahoo with the distribution lists at different times. And I would just suggest, do you have like Outlook on your computer or something else like that where you can store those lists?
Yes.
I would duplicate that down to your own like Outlook. You see what I'm saying? Keep it up there on Yahoo and see if you can solve the problems that Ed was talking about, which access to those lists, somebody may have it and be messing with it. So change the password and then see if anything else happens to it. But I also would take that information and duplicate it and make sure you've got those contact lists and groups on your own computer as well.
Now, one of the ways you could do that is you can configure Outlook to access that email account. Right. And then it would then duplicate the contact list, everything online. But you need to make sure that when you've done that, that you configure the Outlook account to leave the mail on the server.
Yep.
So that way it doesn't remove all the mail from the Yahoo account, that it just makes a copy of it. And what, you know, and then it also makes a copy of the contacts and everything else. That way you have, and then you can copy those contacts and groups, you know, somewhere else on your computer.
So, Marilyn, take a crack at those two things. If you have further problems or challenges, go into our forums and leave your question in there, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of other people who can comment on it in that place as well. So thanks a million for your call. I know that is a problem with Yahoo Mail in particular, I know, managing those groups.
Hmm.
Mike from Monroe, welcome to the Internet Advisor. What can we do for you?
Hi, I thought I could actually help you with a question. I've been a long-time listener.
Yes, thanks, please.
And one of your callers before had mentioned about not being able to connect to the internet.
Right.
With a laptop.
Yes.
And I think you guys have missed the point.
Okay.
It's a very simple problem, but I can say it from experience a lot of times that I'll sit there and reset my router, reset my modem. I've even taken my laptop into Best Buy and been embarrassed by the 18-year-old kid behind the counter that can push a button and make it work.
The switch?
Literally, what I'm wondering is if all he's got is his wireless adapter turned off.
I don't believe so. That's a very good point, Mike.
Yep.
I think you make a very good point. Because he went down to his little icon in the tray, he could see that he had a wireless connection.
Yeah.
True. Okay.
So he had the wireless connection.
Yeah.
But what he didn't have was he couldn't get to the internet. Now, we somewhat established, we went down the idea of, down the idea that we would maybe have trouble getting to the internet. It may be that the browser was corrupt, so that's where we ended, not knowing if it was or not, but giving him some ideas about how to tell if it was.
Mike, just to underline what Mike is saying here, Mike, you're saying there is a physical button on many computers, many of the other older laptops. Like I'm thinking my daughter's Toshiba has exactly that.
Right.
And unfortunately, it's right on the front.
Yeah.
So it's very easy.
Usually do.
It's very easy.
It up and move it, and you slide it, right?
And what's really bad is the Dell laptops, several generations of them, had them on the side. So every time you slipped it in and out of your carrying case, if it rubbed the side, it would shut it off, depending on which orientation you slid it into the...
Yeah.
So if some of you out there, Mike's solution is particularly good for those of you out there who have laptops that are like a couple of generations, as you're saying, ago. They don't do that much anymore. Or Mike, do you know of any recent laptops have you seen that have used those?
I mean, I've got a Compaq. It's only about 18 months old, and it still has the button.
I still have mine. Mine's a brand new HP.
Yeah, mine's brand new, 3 months old, and it has it.
You still have the buttons on there.
And you want to have it because there are times when you want to turn it off. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I use it when I'm on the airplane. I can actually turn it off and use my laptop, not to worry about things. But it inevitably always is after I spent 2 hours of trying to figure out why I don't have a connection.
Yeah.
It's literally, you know...
Well,
my daughter or somebody next door come and say, well, the button's not on.
Excuse me, sir, is it plugged in?
Yeah, there's nothing like a little embarrassment to make something stick.
I was on talking to Comcast, swearing up and down that it was working 30 minutes ago.
And it was.
It was. Mike, thank you so much for a great, simple solution to a lot of problems. We appreciate that.
Maybe not to the caller, but to lots of other people out there.
I wasn't aware that the buttons are still on a lot of them. Where's the button?
Like Mike mentioned, if you are traveling, you want to use your laptop on the airplane, right?
Exactly. You can use it on the airplane without fear of interfering with anybody else's device. All right. Our number again, 800-859-0957. We've got a bunch of people to talk to, Sherry, Jean, and Lynn, but there is plenty of time for your call as well at 800-859-0957. Internet Advisor on the air for you. Thanks once again for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. By the way, thank you to Annie Nichols and Rich Luzinski, the folks who are behind the glass and make the program work back there. Annie is the pleasant voice who greets you now, and our first hour, Angela, was in there. Thank you very much as well for joining us. Guys, did you, just quickly, the Facebook IPO and the whole brouhaha about that coming out this past Friday.
Boy, the media was really trying to build that up, right? And then it went, what? You know?
Wait. Okay. I don't get it at all. It raised $38 per share and a lot, buku shares, right?
Yeah.
And I think the investment bankers did exactly the right job. If they came out and did what happened to LinkedIn, where it doubled in the first day, they didn't do their job. They came out way too low.
Exactly.
They should come out at exactly the right price to price to market, they hit it.
That's what bothered me,
and
too.
That was perfect. That was absolutely IPO.
There was a lot of stupid hype, as you said, Ed, about this thing ahead of time. I was like, oh, if it didn't make 50. No, don't do that, for pity's sake.
Yeah.
Precisely because
I would
of
be
all
so
Zynga.
I would be so mad if I were LinkedIn at my investment bankers for taking me out too low, taking me out half price.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
I only raised half of what I could have because it closed in the first day double what it came out.
See, that's why I don't buy stock, because I had no clue about that.
Yeah,
and thank you, Gary, for explaining that.
But, you know, basically, I thought the same thing.
It was a perfect IPO.
It worked.
Absolutely.
It worked perfectly.
And it raised so much money
Boku.
For Facebook.
No,
yeah.
I just,
that was a technical term, Boku.
Boku. And I just want to find out. I want to see. I'd be interested to see what happens in the next year. 6 months to a year with Facebook, and how are they going to change? That's going to affect me, because it is a social network. Am I going to be inundated with ads? Are they going to sell my information?
Yeah.
Is the user policies going to be changing dramatically?
Now it's out in the speculative market, right?
Yes,
it's out on the stock market. Now Facebook has to produce, right? They're coming out at 100 at a 100 times price earnings ratio. So what that means
is that called market cap.
Well, the market cap is, and I don't recall the market cap, but the total number of shares multiplied by the price per share is the market cap.
Okay, I got you.
Right? So multiples in earnings is you take the $3 billion that they earned last year, and you multiply it by 300 times. So I guess that would be give you, you know, the value of the stock as well, right? Based on, you know, the income.
Yeah.
So, you know, based on that, they've got to make a whole lot of money, right, for those stockholders to ever make that investment
and
work for
one
them.
One of the other things that happened just before they opened up was GM pulled the plug on $10 million worth of ads in Facebook.
For the Super Bowl.
Okay. Because I saw that. Because a big splash.
Now,
GM pulled the plug on $10 million.
Yeah.
For Facebook advertisements is what I thought.
Oh, was it
was for Facebook advertisements, yes.
Oh, okay. Because it's also the Super Bowl ads, I thought. Now, maybe I'm...
No,
maybe
but the headlines was at Facebook, and that's why I thought, oh, boy, I wonder if that's... Yeah. How is that going to...
You know what?
But
you're
even
right.
After
you're
that...
Right. That's happened, too.
Even after that, they ended up at 38.
Anyway,
sorry, folks. That was our blather about that this week. Let's get back to the calls. Sherry from Dearborn, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Oh, thank you. I watch TV on Hulu occasionally.
Oh, good for you.
And they have ads in between sometimes, and they ask you if the ad is interesting to you, and you hit yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
My clicker on my laptop works all the time, but for yes and no, it stopped working. So did I hit something or
no?
Hulu has to make money so they can offer it to you free.
Yeah,
or you have to pay, but to offer you less.
They have been under a lot of pressure. It's interesting. We were just talking about the stock market, et cetera. Hulu, owned by
NBC, I thought.
NBC, yeah. I think it is. But anyway, they have recently, the news has been out there that they are under pressure to make money. And in order to make money, where they got to make sure that your eyeballs stay on that screen. So this is like, for instance, if you watch Comcast, some of those on-demand shows, mm-hmm. you've got to watch the spots that come with it, the commercials, pardon me, that come with it. And that's because they've got to tell the people who are investing in them, people are watching those ads and not just skipping over them.
Right. And there's been pressure on the advertisers that basically we want our money's worth and we want you to remove those skip ad capabilities. Yes. So even though the yes, no box may be still displaying, they've disabled the ability for you to actually click on it.
You know what we love on our cable? Do you have cable, by the way, Sherry?
No.
Oh, okay, but one of the neat things you can do is record a cable program, and then when you get to the commercials, right past them. They don't want you doing that. They don't want you doing that at all.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
that's just to help you so you don't have to pay as much.
Yeah. That's exactly
it
as well.
To pay.
So, Sherry, I hope we've explained that. Nothing broken on your end.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
That was a good question, too. We had great questions today.
Yeah, we had some fantastic. And by the way, room for more great questions at 800-859-0957. Let's move on to Gene from Jackson. Moving down the highway. How are you doing,
Gene?
Actually,
probably not from Jackson, but driving.
Interstate 94 headed westbound.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Hey, guys, I don't know if you can answer this, but I've been running the original iPad, and I'm sort of a news junkie, and I love to read the news.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these news articles link over to Flash Player.
Yeah.
Is the iPad, do you think, ever going to adapt to Flash Player?
Oh, so wow. I thought there would be a little secret switch. That as soon as Steve Jobs died, they would flip the switch and everybody would get Flash Player on their iPads.
Absolutely.
But that didn't happen.
Absolutely nothing.
Didn't happen.
It's not going to happen. They're going with HTML5. You will never see an Flash on there. And you know what? Apple probably had it right because we get five Flash updates at minimum a month now.
Well, because there's so many vulnerabilities that
they're
viruses
discovering.
Attack, right?
It's like Swiss cheese in terms of security.
But it's way too many
How
sites
do you handle
use
that,
Flash
Gary?
Player.
I know you use your iPad.
Yep.
How do you deal with that?
Go to my computer whenever I want to do something with Flash. And there's so many sites that use it. That's too bad.
There's no way of getting around it?
Nope.
Wow.
Now, I have an HP touchpad, which hit the market for a wonderful 90 days before HP pulled the plug on it, and it had Flash, so I could do whatever I want with it.
There are tablets,
now,
in other words.
Go to Android tablet.
Yep. You can go to an Android tablet.
Yep. You can get Flash Player on an Android.
Yep, for a third of the cost.
Yep.
Right.
You know, that it does. You know, Gene, that's
or
one
an
of the
e-book
thing.
Reader. You can get an e-book reader with. Does the e-book readers?
Oh, you
support?
Know, the Nook. Am I right? The Nook Color?
Well, the they all do, I think, now.
Yeah,
Nook and the Kindle Fire.
You know, Gene, there's an answer for you. Yeah. Well, there's, I think, for $120 or somewhere around there, maybe it's $199 now, the Nook Color is
Android. It's a hobbled. It's their own version of
it's
Android.
It's tailored.
Right.
But
thank you.
We had
I was
Rick,
say hobbled.
We had Rick.
I did say hobbled, didn't I? Anyway, tailored.
I thought that was dropping a piece of wood and breaking your kneecaps.
Yeah, something like
that. The Rick Broido was our new gadget guy. We'll be telling you about that in some upcoming programs. But Rick, who is a writer for CNET, came in here, and he had a Nook Color, I believe it was.
Yes, it was,
that he had rooted. In other words, there are for not much money out there, programs that will allow you to completely open up your computer and make it an unfettered version of Android.
There are instructions to how to reinstall Android on there, so it works both
Android.
As a Nook and an Android, and he had all that functionality, and he bought them used, I thought he said, for $79.
Yes, it was an incredible price out there. So you might think for yourself, Gene, for situations when you're on the road as a truck driver, you want to watch something on Flash, that you've got that as an alternative as well. And there are some great deals now, as he said, on refurbished items like the Nook or maybe the Kindle Fire. Doesn't that have?
Yes, Kindle Fire does. That's $199.
Yeah, and you can get those things
beautiful,
refurbished.
Beautiful tablet.
And the Kindle Fire is a beautiful one. So for a lot less money, iPad has a lot of, you know, functionality to it that you may want to keep, but then if you have that along as well, you could probably, you know, get around that in a very inexpensive way of doing it.
Probably when you're stopped, not while you're actually driving.
Yes, please.
Really good.
Well, I thought you could put them to your, you could just, you know, use a piece of twine and hang it from your rearview mirror.
All right, Gene, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you,
Gene.
Appreciate it. Yeah, the problem that he's pointing to is one that unfortunately is hanging out there for still because
I like my iPad, but I'll tell you that's one of the two or three things that I don't like.
Reading hobbles it. Okay, let's go to Lynn. How you doing, Lynn, from State of New York, did I see?
That's correct.
How you doing?
Fair, I guess.
Okay, what can we do for you?
I was thinking, waiting online here for the lady that was thinking about the recipes?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
How about a digital picture frame?
Oh, that is clever.
But how do you stop them?
Because you can set those to just keep the one picture, can you not?
Yep, you can.
Oh, I see what you're saying. But so then, now you load it onto that?
It's sequential, so you'd have to, you know, go through them all, right?
Yeah, but if you didn't have 1,000 recipes, that wouldn't be too bad.
Yep.
Yeah. That's just one. But the idea I was really calling about was the same problem. What about wireless display port?
Wireless.
I know nothing about the technology except that it exists. And for a static page, I was wondering whether that would work for me.
Well, you know what? Let's explore that with you, Lynn.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put you on hold right now. We're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute to work with Lynn about a fascinating problem about a static display, a wireless static display. Can you look one into that? Coming back in just a moment to wrap things up here on the Internet Advisor. Been delightful being with you for these past 2 hours here, almost 2 hours, on the Internet Advisor. By the way, for those of you who may listen to us on the networks and not be able to catch the program as it's being aired live, we love to get your questions, and we have a forum set up. If you go to internetadvisor.net and click on the forums, you can put your question in there, and there's a whole bunch of people, Ed Rudell and Gary, myself, and a lot of other people, visit that and try to get some answers for you, along with a whole host of other folks like Ben Carpenter, who's been around for a long time, Prof Theory. A lot of listeners are in there on a regular basis helping folks, so that if you can't listen to the program live when you download the podcast, or you hear it perhaps on the network at another time, that's a great way to get your question in and get them answered. So let's go wrap things up. Let's go back right now to Lynn from New York. By the way, Lynn, what part of New York are you in?
Part closest to you.
So you can hear us. Okay.
Western New York, right?
Yes.
I love it. That's great. Hey, now you were talking
about the part where they're civilized people.
The state is heavily weighted the other way on the other end, I think.
Unfortunately, that's true.
Now you are talking about, you just as we were leaving, you talked about our recipe lady perhaps using, a question came earlier on, using a wireless, pardon me, the digital photo frames as a way of displaying a recipe that she'd be working with, an individual.
That was
one.
Just one thought I was waiting.
Yeah, now you had another
question. The other one was a wireless display port.
Yep.
And I don't know much about it except people have tried to use it to watch video, and it doesn't have the bandwidth to handle it. But for a static page, seems like it would work.
Yeah. So the wireless display ports, well, the display ports have been used in large displays, a lot of times at trade shows, to connect multiple
monitors
to one graphics card. And
like
one
those
computer.
Big walls, there are a whole bunch of monitors.
And you can display them off, and it'll automatically divide up the image into and display them out over all those monitors. The wireless display adapter, I don't know a lot about them. It would seem that if you're really trying to do this via a wireless connection, that's not a lot of bandwidth for video, clear video, large video.
Well,
right?
What happens is that we get our high-def stations wirelessly right now.
Yeah,
they're being
back
broadcast.
Up. Mm-hmm.
And
we're talking about a static page for recipes.
Oh, yes, right. Yes. No, we're not just denying that would be an easy thing to display.
I think that you're absolutely right.
Absolutely.
There's no reason you can't use a wireless display monitor to drive your monitor, just like you would use a wireless mouse or wireless keyboard. You could certainly do that. You're absolutely right.
But you're asking about
a display in your kitchen. Can you switch back and forth between displays? So you could have just with one click, be able to change over to the wireless display, and so you could have it go into the kitchen.
Well, you know, that technology isn't exactly integrated right now. Yeah. You're not going to be able to buy tablets or laptops that provide that functionality, and you'd have to spend $160 to be able to buy the adapters to do that.
Just the adapter.
Okay, you know, that's what I didn't know.
Yeah, yes. Just the adapter to do it.
You raised a good issue, Lynn, and that is the bandwidth issue. If you're going to be essentially streaming video, for instance, in that wirelessly, that's calling for a lot of bandwidth.
Well, not really, because we're getting the bandwidth right now over the air for free for standard channels or broadcasts in high def. It doesn't use much more. You know how, like, we used to have channels 2, 4, and 7 and stuff like that, and that was only the 360 lines of resolution? You can get 720 is considered high def, and that's what they're broadcasting.
If it's small enough. You just can't do it to, say, a large screen TV.
Right. And they make the wireless devices, which travel over a 60 gigahertz signal, which is more than adequate to do that. So basically, if you have a laptop with DVI out, as Foster and Gary were saying, and you want to hook it up to a high def TV that has HDMI, you can buy adapters that do that.
Yeah.
But it'll cost you $160.
So
and they're basically point to point.
Yep.
Right.
You have a transmitter and a receiver.
That help you, Lynn?
That's a good point.
One other issue.
Yeah, yeah.
You were talking about using different browsers for test purposes.
Yeah, yes. for troubleshooting.
Yeah, right. Check into Browser or Browser, whatever it is.
Browser?
It's one that saves absolutely no cookies or anything, and that way it never changes its settings, so you can...
I want to carefully spell this, because it sounds like something
in
Victoria's Secret.
I can't.
Oh, okay. Browser?
Browser or Browser. It's they used to nickname it, the place where I heard it, the digital program on the radio. They called it the browser for husbands who want to watch porn, because it won't save any cookies or anything
Lord.
That their wife can see. But for my purposes, I use it because it can't save any cookies and thereby get you all tangled up with a lot of
I
settings changed and
yep.
everything else. It'll always be fresh every time because it dumps everything when you click
There's
out
no
of
cache.
It.
There's no cache in it.
Right.
Right.
And it's B-R-O-W-S-R.
Oh, I got it. Okay, B R.
And how do you know that, Gary?
No,
I just looked it up on Google. I'll have to tell you more about it when I read it.
Okay.
I don't know personally. Thanks, Dad.
Anyway, I'll let you guys go. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
That was really excellent. Hey, by the way, we do have a few minutes here before we wrap things up. So if there are some other folks out there with a final call, please use this. We'll squeeze you in at 800.
Get me off the hook here on this.
Gary is squirming. 800-859-0957. So if you got a call you want to get in quickly here at the end, please do.
Hey, you know, Foster, I got a hold of one of the new HP tablets, the Slates.
Oh,
and
did you?
Someone actually threw the pilot version of Windows 8 on there.
Oh, the preview.
Yeah, consumer preview. And I really liked how it operated, but this person is the one that set it up, and they kept on complaining about, why would HP release a device that did this and had these tight? It's really slow. And I'm like, it's consumer preview.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's right.
It's, you know, Microsoft's throwing it out there. It doesn't have all the drivers yet. HP is a strategic partner of Microsoft.
Right.
At some point, they're gonna do this.
So, what was your feeling as you were handling it?
I really liked it
because it's got that Metro interface with the live tiles.
Yeah,
you
like? I only
that?
Got it for a few minutes, but it was very intuitive to use.
Isn't
all
it?
Your applications were just scrolling by? I think HP's going to have a hit with this Slate. I mean, I was surprised even when we had the Microsoft representative here last year. Even he referred to Windows 8 running on a Slate, which is a HP product line for their tablet devices.
Right.
And I was really surprised that. So I asked around, does anyone have a Slate that I could look
you
at?
You said something I think that's really key here, and is that it is intuitive. In other words, that you just as you get it in your hand, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to point or click on a button. And, you know, these live tiles, for instance, means that, for instance, you may have Facebook going in there or something else. And, you know, it's an incredible way to, I think, to make computers much more accessible to people.
It gives the impression of applications in a Windows environment being apps, you know, which everyone is like, you know, now that we're in the tablet environment, they want to have apps. This is a way for Windows 8 to have a new look and feel that is app-centric.
Aptify.
One of the things I saw come out this week in the news, though, that made me a little concerned is that because you remember in the past, Gary, early to mid-90s, we were talking about it when we began our program, I think, a little later on, was the whole issue of Microsoft only bundling together Internet Explorer with their products.
Right.
And not making it accessible. There's now a big stink with this new Windows 8 about Firefox saying, we're not going to even bother trying because there's no hooks for us on this. And Chrome just said the same thing.
Really?
So it'd be very interesting to see if that Microsoft doesn't end up in the same antitrust soup that they were in before, because only one browser, and lo and behold, it's theirs.
Hey, guess what? Apple does it.
Well, you can use other browsers. You can use other browsers with Firefox and Google for, Chrome, for instance. Yeah. But this one,
same
apparently,
there's not the same kind of interoperability that Microsoft had put in. But people had somehow used those vulnerabilities.
Well,
right?
it's something I'm sure we will talk about in the near future. For the rest of you out there, thank you so much for being with us. Don't forget to visit InternetAdvisor.net, our homepage, and hey, say hello to us on Facebook as well. See you very soon.
You've been listening to a podcast of the second hour of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at InternetAdvisor.net.